morning. Hello, we're talking now. You don't hear him yet?
No.
He doesn't hear me yet.
Yeah, we're getting the levels though.
Oh.
Yeah, and I did a test, so it, and it played back.
All right, okay.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to take this out.
Are you ready to go? Can you hear me now? Okay. Today is Wednesday, the 28th of June. We're interviewing Brian Maloney, a class graduate of 1972. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Gus.
Brian, I just said you graduated in 72, and you were here just last Saturday for a marriage event. That's 45 years. What is it that brings you back all these years? I've seen you here 10 times a year for the last 30 years. That's 300 times.
Well, probably been more than that.
Because, oh, I'm sure there is. I wasn't counting. I was just taking a shot at it.
Well, good shot. But, since I graduated, I've always remained kind of close to the college. I came back to work here in 1979.
Okay.
Dennis Murray and I started on the same day, August 1st, 1979. I came to work in the admissions office. When I was a student, I did an internship in admissions.
Oh, you did?
With Dave Flynn. And Jim Daly was my internship partner, a classmate of mine.
Uh-huh.
And by 1979, Jim had become director of admissions here and was trying to coax me back into admissions. I was teaching then at Bishop Dunn in Newburgh.
I see.
Teaching 6th, 7th, and 8th grade math and social studies.
I see. Oh, I didn't realize you were a teacher there. Go ahead.
And Jim finally convinced me that I should need to come back to Marist. And I kind of convinced myself that since I like to eat, that, you know, maybe I should, because I was getting sick and tired of cheeseburgers every night.
Right.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, you didn't make a lot of money as a Catholic school teacher. But
no,
it was great, but so.
Yeah.
That
you
kept
didn't
me
have
coming
to.
Back.
Yes. All right. Back to the beginning, though. How did it all start? Where were you born, brought up? What school did you go to?
I was born in Flushing, New York, and my family lived in Jackson Heights at the time. And when I was about 4, we moved out to Nassau County in Long Island, to Bethpage, where I attended public schools, Pine Avenue School, until the middle of 6th grade when our parish opened up a Catholic school, and I had to leave in the middle of the year and go to Catholic school, finish 6th grade. Over that summer, we moved out to St. James in Suffolk County, and then I went to St. Philip and James School for 7th and 8th grade in St. James, and then on to St. Anthony's High School.
St. Anthony's High School,
which was then in Smithtown.
Okay. And then after high school, or got to go to college now, or did you go to college right after high school?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it did.
And I found out about Marist from fellows that were a year ahead of me at St. Anthony's who came to Marist.
Uh-huh.
And, so I would see them and run into them, you know, when they were home. And that's how I found about Marist. Found out about Marist. I came up and visited. I didn't get started on my college applications till late in my senior year, but I came up and visited Marist in March of my senior year, and I just knew that this was where I was going to go.
It was must a pretty primitive place, though, was it not? And those years, the dormitories were, what was up yet? Was Fontaine up? Leo Hall was not yet up, was it?
Oh, no, it was. It was she and Leo and Champagne were all up.
Oh, were they?
And, yeah, so Champagne being the newest, you know,
yeah,
so.
No, I see.
And I have the great, but very fortunate to live in Champagne Hall all 4 years.
I see.
Which was great because I hate cold and I hate the winter.
I see.
So to go to meals.
Yeah.
In the campus center.
Yeah.
I mean,
downstairs.
Middle of winter, we could go in shorts and flip flops and a T-shirt.
I see.
And everybody else was coming over in winter coats and boots and hats and everything.
Okay. Who was your proctor on the floor?
Well, my fresh explore east. No, I lived on the first floor west, and it was Louis Alpert, who was a math professor, was our proctor on that floor.
You never had La Pietra or any of the brothers in those years, did you?
Trying to think. My sophomore year, I think we had Brother Pat Forsythe.
Oh, okay. Well, you didn't have the real discipline then, did you, about study only from 7 to 9, doors open?
My freshman year we did.
Oh, you
that
did?
That all changed.
That all changed, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, after my freshman year.
Okay. What did you major in while you were here?
Well, I started as a chemistry major.
Uh-huh.
And I had to, you know, what I wanted to do was teach chemistry in high school, but one of the things that I didn't take into account was the smell of chemistry labs. This was before there were fume hoods and all the other stuff. And actually, you know, you could get by, you know, labs in high school were not that long. And,
right.
It was still smelly, but doing, you know, when you came starting here, you know, when you had labs for 3 hours at a time, I'm getting nauseous just smelling chem labs. So
let's not go there. I got the picture.
Yeah. So I decided, you know, maybe chemistry. I mean, I could teach something else, you know. So, I changed my major to history, but I kept taking math courses because I like math. And,
I see.
You know, so. Which actually served me well later on when I was hired at Bishop Dunn as a social studies teacher. They asked me if I could also teach math, and I said, "Oh, sure." I was very comfortable with
it,
so
I see.
I was glad I stuck with those math courses.
Well, high school math would be what, geometry, trigonometry at the most.
But I taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grade.
Okay.
You know, you know, you got up into algebra and some geometry, but
right. Did you work while you were in college on campus or off campus? Or?
Yeah, both. My freshman year, I actually hooked up with some musicians and convinced two guys who were juniors, I think, sophomores and juniors, who one was a singer, one was a guitar player, and they had a nice little act going, and I convinced them that they needed a drummer.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have a set of drums, but I knew one of the guys from my high school who was a sophomore at Marist. I knew he had drums, so I would borrow his drums and, you know, we would play at some clubs, you know, around the area. We actually made pretty good money on it, you know.
I see.
And then...
did you ever have lessons in drumming?
No, I used to play in a drum and bugle corps when I was a kid. So.
Oh, I see.
and the rest was kind of like, you know.
Natural to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then, sophomore year, I worked for Posada, the food service.
I see.
In the slop room.
I see.
Everybody returned their trays.
Yeah, I know it only too well. Yes.
And so we had a lot of fun there. And then, we also worked like, we had a month off
in January
for semester break. And we worked, my roommate, Bill Anderson, and I, we worked at Weston Printing during the day.
Uh-huh.
And then at night we worked security for Marist.
Uh-huh.
And, and then I got a job bartending in the Brown Derby, which was actually ideal.
Was Doc Dougherty employed there yet? Or had he moved on?
I think Doc was,
Okay.
And Andy Droz from the class of 68 and a bunch of other Marist guys.
Okay. I really want to get to something more pressing at the moment. That is, did you go to graduate school?
I did, yes.
And you did administration or fundraising or what was
I got a master's in public administration from John Jay College.
Okay.
CUNY.
Did you live in the city when you did that, or
I lived in Poughkeepsie.
You lived in Poughkeepsie and you went down by train to John Jay?
No, actually, at the time I was working at St. Thomas Aquinas College in Rockland County,
okay.
And John Jay had an extension center at West Point. was, you know, okay for me to, you know, to take the courses at West Point. I was on my way home, so that's what I did.
Very good. Let's go back to Marist again now. You were employed here then with Dennis Murray coming on board, and you were coming on board. What was the situation? What was the need for Marist? Were we struggling to survive, or had we crossed that bridge and we're doing pretty well in those years, roughly speaking?
Well, you know, I think we were just holding our own. You know, it was 1979. Excuse me. The economy wasn't fabulous, but you know, I think, you know, Marist had made a couple of moves in the previous years. I mean, one, they got a Title III grant, which was important. I think that was in 77 or 78.
Uh-huh.
And picked up when Bennett College closed in Millbrook, and so we picked up the fashion design and merchandising program.
Uh-huh.
And so that was a boon to the enrollment. But there, you know, it was kind of pretty lean. I mean, you know, working in admissions at the time, you know, we were selling the school when there wasn't that much to sell.
Right, right.
And so it was challenging, but there was one thing that I think I know drew me to Marist immediately when I came to campus. There was kind of an esprit de corps among the students.
Uh-huh.
There was a slight feeling like, okay, we might be an underdog, but we're gonna beat you somehow.
Yeah.
We're gonna, you know.
Yeah.
And there was that kind of a spirit.
I see.
When I was a student, and you know, and then later on in, you know, in working here, I think, you know, that was conveyed somehow, that spirit here when people came on campus, you know. So, it was challenging, but, you know, Dennis Murray had a vision, and this still stays with me after all these years. I mean, in his first addresses, you know, to faculty and staff, you know, he talked about gaining a national reputation for parents. We all thought he was nuts, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like, how the heck are we going to do this, you know?
Get across the Hudson, we'll be fine, you know.
You know, I mean, so, but, you know, he, you know, took a very long view.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, he knew that he wanted, you know, some of the flagship programs in communications and in computer science.
Yeah.
He saw those as two huge assets to
really
play those things up. And the internship programs, I think, was another big plus that, you know, he thought he could leverage. The Marist Institute for Public Opinion, he thought he could leverage that.
Yeah.
So he had a pretty grand vision, you know. And he stuck to it over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I give him a lot of credit because he believed in it before, I think, a lot of other people could even see it.
Uh-huh.
So I give him tremendous credit.
Yeah, that fits into my next question. You look at Marist now, and the contrast between the old view that we had, are we going to survive, you know, and the view now, I don't know that I could get in here, much less teach here, you know, in terms of the requirements and credentials before applying, you know. And so you say, well, how did this happen? You know, what's the transfer? You mentioned Dennis Murray, but no one ever came here for his courses. I mean, he's not a great teacher, that's not the point whether he was or wasn't. He was not known to be a teacher. But there are factors that were involved, and I don't know if there's one more than the other, or all equal. One, the Marist tradition, because Marist schools in New York were feeders from the beginning, where 70 miles from New York City, so we're on a location of the Hudson that's easy to get to, you know, that would be another. This, you know, Dennis Murray, of course, made a major role in reaching out, because Linus had set IBM in place, but he would be able to capitalize that on even more, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
in terms of those things. What from admissions point of view, what would you have said is part of this? The marriage spirit, the kids, they seem to draw each other. I mean, you're influenced by one another.
I think that was a part of it. I think a number of things. The location was great for anybody from the tri-state area. It had a great location. It was, you know, it was far enough away, but not
too
that far.
Far
that you had to, you know, take airplane flights all the time.
You get home overnight.
There was that. There was one of the big things too from an admission standpoint. Excuse me. Was the New York State Tuition Assistance Program.
Yeah.
For New York State residents, if they went to school in New York State, and they could be eligible for a TAP grant if they're, depending on their financial need. And those were things, if you know, if they were eligible for that, they could use it at any public or private school in New York State, but not out of New York State. So it kept New York State residents local, and that was a factor. Plus, I thought, you know, parents particularly, they looked at it, you know, well, if I spend this money on my child's education, you know, I want them to be able to get a job.
Uh-huh.
Because they'd been through recession in the 70s and stuff, and they were like, you know, so the internship programs were a big factor in reassuring, you know, families that, you know, they're going to have some practical experience and a degree when they graduate.
Uh-huh.
So those were things that we leveraged in admissions.
Uh-huh.
And I think that helped tremendously. And then, you know, once kids got here, the way that Marist people bonded,
uh-huh.
and today, I mean, even I have friends who didn't go to Marist who just marvel at the way that, you know, when Marist people get together, it's just like this natural bond,
uh-huh.
and they've stayed in touch all these years. And they marvel at that because they didn't have that experience within their own colleges.
I had Father Lamort here once for this kind of an interview, and I was asking him the differences that he saw in his time. He didn't come here, but he, as a chaplain at the beginning and later on, and he talked about the economic difference in the students. Two or three people might have had cars when he first came here 25, 30 years ago, you know, and it looked like they had been banged by trains or something because they were kind of wrecks. Now he couldn't afford the cars that most of the students here have, you know. So the change in the economic situation in the country, all the tide went up, the economy is better, and I suppose we can afford. The point that you make, getting a job, seems still to be significant. The tuition now is $50,000 a year. That's $200,000 for the 4 years. Are you going to get a job that's going to be able to do that? So that's part of another question. Is it just to get a job, or is to earn a living, or to learn how to live, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, having worked in higher ed most of my career, that's a great question, because it just comes from people's needs. I mean, back, I think when I came to Marist, the thinking was, well, you know, as long as you have a bachelor's degree, it doesn't make any difference what it's in. You know, companies, corporations, they'll train you because they know you're trainable.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dennis Martin used to always call the liberal arts the furniture of the mind. You know,
it's been pushed aside a little bit now for computer science.
Maybe it has, but, you know, I mean, now, I mean, one of the challenges I think that facing Marist, and not only Marist, but all of higher ed, is the fact that, as the price has escalated, most of the courses that, you know, you could go to college and take, a lot of times you can take them online for nothing.
Uh-huh.
Stanford, I think, their whole curriculum is online, and you can take it for nothing. You may not going to get credit unless you pay, but I mean, that's, you know, I think a trend. I mean, practically anything somebody wants to learn, they can do that that's a question that, you know, a lot of institutions and individuals, I think, are going to have to answer moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the value?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think that the moral and ethical side is something that I hope doesn't get pushed to the side. Because you can have all the technical expertise and you know, abilities in the world. If you don't know how to use them for good,
yeah.
We're going to have problems.
Oh, yeah. All right.
You know, so that's a challenge I think that's going to be facing, you know, all institutions.
All right, look into the crystal ball. Where do you see us 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Is marriage still going to be here? Do we need a college education? You know, is it something that is, does it have a dim future, or we're in a good position now, but can we maintain this? Can taking courses online be sufficient? We don't need the campus. You know, these are fundamental questions, I guess, that are on the table.
Well, it is a great question, and here's the thing. I mean, spending most of my career in higher education in the advancement area and fundraising area, people would ask me, well, you know, what does the college need?
Yeah.
And I said, colleges have no needs. People have needs. Colleges have means of meeting those needs. They have solutions, but they don't have needs. So the needs of the people will determine whether Marist is going to be here in 10 years, in 20 years, the needs of society, the needs of individuals, and Marist's ability to meet those needs is going to determine, I believe, you know, whether it's still going to be here, whether it still has value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as I say, it's a challenge for all institutions. But
yeah,
that's the way I look at it, because...
Yeah.
Well,
we may not need a course in old English literature outside of amusement on how the early stories, but I think the med tech program has a practical application. People want to stay well. When they fall, they want to be able to be cured of it, you know. And so that building over there that we recently put up, it would probably be, you know, more of a lifesaver than we appreciate, given those points you just made, you know. That's
Well, that's because society has a need for physician's assistants and, you know, all the other, you know, associated fields in medical technology, but because Marist is meeting a need that society has, that people have.
Uh-huh.
So that's a great step in the right direction. You know, I'm sure that, you know, whether the world needs another law school, I'm not so sure. But, you know.
Yeah, I there was a question about the new president. Is this in the mind of the trustees that they say, well, you know, law is always a source of great income for lawyers? Not so much in our day. I mean, some of them are making minimal salaries, and many are looking for something better to do than running from court to court. You say there's no needs of the college, that people have needs, but what, at the present time, would you say are some important things that Marist could use? What is missing in our present status? That you, if you had a chance to talk to the board, what would be something from your view of the world and upper education that would be a worthwhile investment?
Well, I would think that, I mean, if I would have the opportunity to tell the board what I thought was important, first, you know, I think that the board should always be mindful of the heritage of the college. That there static world that might work, but it doesn't work in the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
It just changes too quickly.
About this time last year, I interviewed Eileen Silko, who is Fred Murray's secretary, as she just retired. And I asked the question about the students. What has she seen in the difference of students between her first years, 18 years ago, coming to Dennis, and today? And I said, you know, we're putting up 4 new dormitory buildings over there, you know, and we're not raising the number of students coming on campus. Is it worth it? Why are we doing this? What would you say would be an explanation for it? She said students' interests and needs have changed. For instance, when you came here, probably very few students in your class had their own bedroom at home. If they had another brother, they shared a bedroom. Now most students have their own bedroom, you know. They come to campus, they're not going to live in a dormitory, per se, with, you know, a number of other people. And so that has changed dramatically. Do you see that in these kids? Are they independently minded? They want their own world, as it were, their own cell phone, their own this and that, computer, their own car.
I don't know. I mean, I see that, and I see I mean, I understand that kids, you know, many of them grow up differently, and they, you know, they didn't have to share a bedroom, they didn't have to share a bathroom, they didn't, you know. So, you know, I know colleges have adapted to that. I also think that, you know, it can be great to have the experience of rooming with someone. I think it makes you a little bit more tolerant,
uh-huh.
a little bit more patient.
Uh-huh.
A little bit more understanding.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you do share a room with somebody. So, I mean, there are pluses to that. And, you know, I think looking back, you know, at some point, you know, the students of today, you know, will they have missed something by not,
yeah.
you know, sharing a room with somebody?
Yeah.
You know, between that, a single room, their cell phone, you know, how many, you know, those are degrees of isolation.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, I think.
It's not a good thing in this.
Well,
day.
You know, I think they miss a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we always go back to, you know, when you lived in the dorm, you know, you were always in somebody's room BSing with somebody about something.
Yeah, right.
You know, they were 2, 3, 4, 5 of you, you know. And, you know, so maybe students today do that online, you know, chatting online or whatever. But is it the same? I don't know. You know, when you have to, you know, if 90% of communication is nonverbal,
mm-hmm.
what are you missing?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, she also really got the point that there used to be a time when students used to love to get off campus and the freedom of being off campus.
Mm-hmm.
She says, now that's not the case. They all want to be here. I mean, we know we have the residents in town and the hotel, no more. I mean, everybody wants to be on campus. She talked about a mother calling and saying that she wants a daughter living on campus, and Eileen said, well, there's no room. And she said, well, I'm going to call the president every day. She says, and when you do, you'll get me. And here's the story. There was no room for Jesus in the inn, and they had to go to the stable. There's no room for your daughter. When there is, we'll let her in, you know. So that the parents, being their first defendant, wanted them here. And, of course, with more than half the campus women, there's that tendency of having them under the protection of the college, I suppose, you know, that would be the case here.
I think that's a big point, too, is I look at today's world as opposed to when 1968, when I came here as a freshman, you know, it's a little bit more dangerous of a world, I think.
Yeah.
Even though there was a lot of stuff going on in 1968, you know, in terms of, you know, anti-war demonstrations, civil rights
yeah.
demonstrations, riots here and
Thanksgiving going, the whole thing, yeah.
But, you know, but I think basically, I think families perceive campus experience as being a little bit more, as being more safe.
One of the last questions now is this. We play football in a category that we do, and for one thing, we go to California to play Los Angeles or whoever it is out there every other year. We put 90 kids on an airplane and fly them across the country. And so many of us people are saying, is it worth it? And other people tell me, yes, you know, we actually have 90 full-time students from California coming to Marist this year, you know, and that wouldn't be if they didn't know about the place, you know. And so there's some kind of, another professor in computer science, Roger Norton, tells me that his statistics show that the college capability or interest or student population in the Northeast is fairly drying up. And it's to the west of the Mississippi that we're going to have to go, you know. If you were in admissions, how would we get the word out there?
Well, I think, you know, there's a variety of ways. I mean, I think, you know, I know that Marist, you know, has an admissions rep who lives in California, Corinne Schell. And Corinne not only covers, you know, the western part of the United States, but Hawaii. And amazingly enough, we do get good numbers of students from those areas. But I think, you know, when I was at the admissions office, we may have had between maybe 4,000 alums.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have about
40,000.
Yeah. And so those I think alums help spread the college's reputation. I think, you know, the name recognition of the school has expanded tremendously, you know, through, you know, not only through Division I athletics, you know, just, I remember when we first started watching the St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York City.
Yeah.
And it was 1980. And, you know, people, you know, there were some people who would recognize Marist, you know, but
yeah.
I mean, over the years,
yeah.
I mean, now it's, the name recognition is, you know, overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when I was a student at Marist, you know, people thought the college was named after Roger Maris, the baseball player. Well, at Marist College, you know. I mean, it was.
Some thought it was Marxist.
Well, yeah. But it was just, you know, I mean, so there's a variety of factors that, you know, if you want to be in people's choice set,
yeah,
they have to have heard your name before.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think over the last, and I think this year it'll be 45 years since my graduation. So in the last 45 years, I think the name recognition of the school has increased tremendously, not only in our, you know, traditional northeastern region, but, you know, across the country. And, in, you know, look at the number of international students. There were students from other countries when I was a student here.
About six from Spain, two from,
You know, there were students from Ecuador,
yeah.
There were students from
Brazil. We had a Marist brother from Brazil.
But I remember three students from Ecuador, you know, during my time here. You know, so you know, it that exchange. I think, you know, the Florence campus will probably enhance the name.
Yeah.
You know, internationally.
Yeah.
But so it's in that regard, I think, when you get back to the football team playing across, well, you know, I would love to see the basketball team do a little bit better because it's a much less expensive program to run, probably. You know, one of the other challenges that many schools face is maintaining
baseball as well.
But I mean, there's baseball and there's softball for women, but there hasn't been women's football yet.
I know.
Maybe there will be someday. Who knows?
All right. I think I've covered pretty much. Is there anything you would like to add to this that you would like to say in terms of concluding this? It's been a wonderful interview, and aspects of something I know I didn't cut to, like the Catholicity point.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still a Catholic college? Yeah, is that an issue, or should it be?
Well, I mean,
I didn't mean to want to go there.
It depends. I mean, because there are a lot of families who perceive this to be a Catholic college.
Right.
You know, I can remember being in admissions when technically, we were not a Catholic college.
Yeah.
You know, we used to say, well, we're Catholic with a small C.
What
does that mean? Well, who the hell knows?
Right.
But I think the college has been Catholic in its heritage, in its culture for many years. I think that has, I think that it has become tremendously more diverse.
Uh-huh.
My understanding now is that about 22% of the students are students of color, which I think comparatively is an excellent, ratio. I think the school is much more diverse now than it was. I'm sure that and it's not technically a Catholic college. However, as I mentioned before, I think the core values of the Marist Brothers, and I view the Marist Brothers as being a pretty ecumenical bunch.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you're not Catholic, we don't want you. They've never been that way.
Yeah,
they're not. And I don't think they will. I mean, but I think their core values are extremely important. I myself personally would love, we do have a Catholic studies program here,
mm-hmm.
which I think is important. We also have a Jewish studies program.
Uh-huh.
I would love to see Our Lady of Seed Wisdom Chapel always remain a Catholic chapel.
Uh-huh.
And I think that would be a wonderful tribute to the Marist Brothers as founders of the
college. Good. Well, I asked Lamort, the priest, the same question, and he said, if it was 85% black, would you say it's a black college? If it was 85% Jewish, would you say it's a Jewish college? Well, 85% of the people come here claim that Catholicity is their religion, The percentage is higher than at Notre Dame for those. So at that rate, we have the image of being Catholic, and the tradition of being Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
The earlier point that you made, I think, has to be brought up in high letters, and that is the ethical and basic goodness that's sought, to teach those things that have that kind of influence on your graduates would be a great contribution to the country, So thank you very much, Brian. It was very nice having this talk with you, and the college appreciates. I hope they do. You might have heard there on Sunday or last Saturday, in fact, Jalene saying that she had used this to get information for what she wanted to talk about, for Kevin. And Jerry Weiss last year, I heard too that they went back to his files, his interview, to find out some things that he had said about his study in the Navy and so on. So we don't see it today, we see it tomorrow.
I just have one more little thought that popped into my head when we were talking about how Marist was kind of a welcoming place, a very ecumenical place.
Yeah.
I remember taking a course, the Principles of Judaism, and the instructor was Reese Williams, who was Protestant. So I'm at a Catholic college taking a course with a Protestant minister who's teaching me the principles of Judaism. If that's not ecumenical, I don't know what it is.
Wonderful.
So.
Good.
Thank you.
But you know how to shut this off.
I,